I could not be more excited about this new addition to the Forever Dog Podcast Network. They are our sisters. They are our Judies. It's Sydney Washington and Marie Faustin, and the unofficial expert is now on Forever Dog Podcast Network, and you are gagged.
We're so, so, so thrilled, and you are gagged.
You are, listener. Yeah, I'm talking to you driving your car, you on the subway, you washing your goddamn dish.
Oh, God. You're really coming for the dishwashers, aren't you? Yeah. Sydney and Marie are truly like two of the most charismatic, charming, funny people. I could listen to them talk all day. If you love sex and dating podcasts, comedy podcasts, or Forever Dog podcasts, like Las Culturistas and Seek Treatment, you're going to love the Unofficial Expert.
So basically what happens on the Unofficial Expert is Sydney and Marie will sit down with comedians and, you know, people of note who claim to be experts in very specific fields like flirting, porn, daddy issues, online dating, cookouts, stalking. I went on and I was the Hollywood expert.
Nice.
And it's just, they just shoot the shit about these things that they're experts in.
I went on, I was the travel expert. It was a completely aimless conversation that still managed to be compelling.
We love aimless.
We love aimless. Sydney and Marie are unapologetic, exciting, incredibly funny, and you need to get to know them and their hilarious, honest comedy ASAP.
Yeah, you probably heard their episode on Las Culturistas. It was so fun.
So fun.
And I think maybe we should even do some crossover episodes with them. Maybe trade up the host a little bit, really shake this shit up
trade
a little
up
bit.
Host.
I
wow.
love it. So subscribe to the Unofficial Expert right now at Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh, hi, it's Bowen here, and I have to tell you about our next I Don't Think So Honey live show here in New York as part of the Brooklyn Comedy Festival on September 22nd at 7 p.m. at Brooklyn Bazaar, 150 Greenpoint Avenue in Brooklyn. It's going to be so fun. The unofficial theme of this one is Legends All. We're doing all vets, basically, people who've done it before, who have really defined the form for what it is. It's going to be so fun. We're so excited. 50 comedians. And here's a first look at the lineup. We've got your legends. We've got your Larry Owens, your Anna Fabregas, your Catherine Cohens, Aaron Jacksons, Julio Torres's, Mitra Juhari's, Peter Smith, Francesca Ramsey, her first time doing it live. You cannot miss this. Oh, and Cola Scola, Dwayne Perkins, Sarah Tolomash, Pat Regan. Daw. It's going to be so, so, so fun. Again, that's September 22nd at 7 p.m. at Brooklyn Bazaar as part of the Brooklyn Comedy Festival. Can't wait. See you there.
Forever Dog.
Look, man.
Where?
Oh, I see. Wow. Bowen, look over there.
Wow, is that Ooh. Culture?
Yes.
Oh, my goodness.
Cool. Wow. Yeah.
Las Culturistas.
Ding dong, Las Culturistas calling.
And look at us, recording on Sunday, the Lord's Day.
I asked HPJ, hot producer Joe, I said, do you normally come in on Sundays? He goes, yeah, basically.
You come in every day, don't you? Oh, my God.
We gotta do like a little, I don't know, lifestyle clinic with Joe, because he's gotta like claim the time for himself and not be this workaholic.
Maybe we need to do a whole Patreon series, which is the life of Joe, HPJ, and just really so the listeners can really get to see a glimpse behind the man.
Yes.
Behind the hot facade. And I want to say, your desk looks fucking incredible.
Oh, it's a Marie Kondo dream.
You cleaned that desk.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You got on your hands and knees, didn't you? Is that a fridge down there? I haven't even seen that
on
fridge.
The desk. Fridge has been there. Fridge has been there all along.
But you couldn't see it with all the clutter.
Oh, well. First of all, Terry Abel of New York Magazine loves hot producer content. This is hot producer content right here.
But he's saying nothing.
It's okay. But just everyone, if you want to give Joe a little bit of, I don't know, advice on how to sort of like just self-care, maybe? I don't know. We're in this moment now.
He doesn't need advice. He's got a thing in front of him that separates papers. What is that?
It's a letter separator.
That's incredible. I've never seen anything like this.
Well,
letter separator. Separates one letter from all the other ones?
Yep.
Unbelievable, Joe.
That is the function.
You're a maniac.
We have like a really, really, really honorable guest.
It's a big day.
It's a big day. He's laughing. He's chuckling.
Chuckling along. And it's
honorable, I like.
Honorable is a good word.
What else would you say?
The honorable. The esteem.
It
sounds just like I'm an ex-prime minister or a kung fu master.
Sure, but we attach the honorable.
Or, you know, a Joe.
that's an honorific.
Yes, it's attached to honorifics. And here's the thing. I was going to say two things. It's a big day.
It's a big day.
For several reasons. One, we have this guest.
Yes.
Two, we're going to go see this guest's show later on.
Yes.
Now say the title because I'm stupid and can't.
Après le déluge.
Oh, bitch.
After
can you please say it?
Please
Après le déluge. He got it.
He did
pretty close.
Yeah, that's pretty
I
good.
I have to believe in myself
more,
I think,
Scott. Yeah, but you
practiced
before the podcast.
That's true. That's but how many fair. Times did I get it wrong before I got it right?
18.
18.
Yeah.
18 was 18. The number. Was
well, 18 18 fois.
18 fois.
18 fois. I also want to say one thing. I want to brag about my best friend.
Yeah, yeah.
My best friend, Bowen Yang, is doing the monologues at Ascot tonight.
Oh, I'm very excited.
And that's wonderful.
Excited. It's fun.
And then we're going to do that, and then we're going to go say Après le déluge.
Après le déluge, the Buddy Cool monologues at Joe's Pub. He just finished a great run of shows there this summer. Hopefully he comes back, but he's an old Joe's Pub Rez.
Old Joe's Pub Ho.
Old Joe's Pub Ho.
Ho's Pub. Ho's
Joe
Pub.
Hoa.
Joe Ho. Joe Hoa.
Yes, honey.
He is, God, he's just really... kind of phenomenal.
He's an honorable sketch comedy legend. Let's just go ahead and say that from the Kids in the Hall.
From Kids in the Hall. And you know, I would say we'll talk about this. You and I wouldn't be doing any of what we would be doing without him. I truly
not
believe
without
this
honorable one.
Not
right
without
here.
This honorable one.
I didn't tell you.
And he's also celebrating the re-release of his book, Buddy Babylon, the autobiography.
Love a good re-release.
Yes, Buddy Babylon, the autobiography.
You know the
Buddy
release
Cole.
Went well when there's a re-release.
When there's a re-release, I think they did it at Stonewall.
That's
they
actually
did.
Rule of culture number six. You know the release went well when there's a re-release.
Absolutely. And please check out his album, Not a Fan. It is our honor to welcome the honorable.
Scott Thompson.
Thank you very much.
Well,
it's an honor to be here.
Oh,
it really is.
Now, here's the thing. So, look, growing up, I had like Saturday Night Live and Mad TV.
Right.
I didn't really have Kids in the Hall. Like, uh-huh. In America, that wasn't really part of like my like I guess media diet, would
sure,
you call
sure.
it?
Mm-hmm.
But I've become familiar with it recently, and I have to say, I'm kind of happy I didn't grow up with it because I think I'd be overwhelmed right now.
Really?
Yeah, I think I would. I think I really would. I think you're definitely honorable.
Thank you very much.
Scott is I don't know. Just accept this. It is a legend.
I just is.
You
just is
what you is. And, you know, it's just being able to just, I don't know, see Buddy Cole sort of unfold and sort of develop over time during a time of your Andrew Dice Clays and your Eddie Murphys just saying, like, horrendous things during the specter of AIDS.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. It is a significant sort of little locus in queer comedy, I think. So I don't know. It is an honor to have you. So you're in town, and then are you going back to LA after this?
Yes, I am.
Great,
absolutely.
Great, great.
Yeah.
Or did you split your time between what LA and
no Toronto?
Oh,
I lived in Toronto for years,
great.
And then I moved back about a year and a half ago,
mm-hmm.
just before Trump was elected. I went, oh, it's gonna get hot down there.
Sure. Get out of here.
This is gonna be fun.
Yeah,
I think I'm needed. So like you know what I mean? Like the Batman signal went out, and I went,
yes,
I'm
yeah,
going
yeah, yeah.
back.
Wow.
What's the buddy?
The BC was the BC.
Yeah, it was BC.
They need Buddy Cole,
like a martini. Glass on the
yeah,
sky.
Yeah, yeah.
Exactly.
It's the silver dollar, like a thing. Yeah.
Yes.
the
so
logo.
Now, do you think that Buddy has kind of stayed the same?
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, the whole what are the premises of the show? It's 25 years.
Yeah.
It's all about. It's 23 years. It's monologues written from the end of the Kids in the Hall.
Yep.
Après le déluge.
Uh-huh.
Déluge refers to the Kids in the Hall, which means flood.
Mm-hmm.
Déluge.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So it's the flood, and then it's afterwards when Buddy was like. Tossed into the wilderness.
Yes.
And so I kept writing and I've always performed.
Yeah.
But, you know, so they're like monologues from, so nothing's ever been on television.
Right,
right, right.
right,
right.
And, but the whole premise is the world changes drastically all the way around him.
Yes.
But he doesn't budge an inch.
Yeah.
No, and people say, how does Buddy change? And I go, none.
That's not the point.
Why would a perfect character change?
He was actualized from the jump.
Yeah. And even like, and also in terms of comedy, like it's almost like a hard and fast rule in comedy that comic characters don't really change.
Mm-hmm.
They don't really learn. And that's part of what makes them so joyful to watch because human beings love to see people make the same mistakes over and over again.
Yes. Yeah.
Or with Buddy, they just love to see Buddy make the right choice over and over again.
Yeah.
But no, he hasn't. I look different, but the clothes are the same. You know, he still wears this, you know, he found a timeless fashion.
Right. Yeah, right.
And he stuck to it.
Does he smoke still?
No, but there's a point in the show when in 1998 when Buddy gets
the gay bar.
Yeah,
he stopped smoking.
But that was back before. But there is a period in the show when Buddy takes up. In 1998, Buddy tests negative for AIDS, uh-huh. and he decides, well, then I might as well start smoking again. so I do start smoking again in the show. Yeah. Then I quit again on stage.
Were you involved heavily in the Buddy fashions?
Very heavily.
That came from you?
Yes.
All right.
Every single monologue had to have an outfit that was a kind of a visual equivalent of what he was speaking about.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So there were always signifiers in the outfits. I mean, I tried to basically say, you know, the basic shape of Buddy is, you know, the pants and the shoes. No socks. He can't wear socks.
Right.
You know, and the jacket, the smoking jacket. But we went really far. And maybe in a way we kind of went too far in some of the outfits. Like, I mean, there was one modeled on the girl in the back of Export A cigarettes. That was a great look. And then there was one where he had his nipples cut, the nipple cut out.
Yes.
I was always looking for an excuse to showcase Buddy's nips.
Yeah, that came from the nipple early.
Yes. But I worked very, very closely with Hillary Corbett, who was our costume designer.
Uh-huh.
And I think the best thing we ever made together, what she ever made, was the Buddy Cole outfit, Girls of Summer, when he becomes the coach of the lesbians softball team.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Once again, there was nipple cutouts.
Sure.
But that was a great. I mean, yes, so we were very involved. And that's one of the things I like to do with this show once we put it into the shop for a few months.
Uh-huh.
I want to give it a bit more, like I give it some visual excitement.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It has visual excitement, but I'd like it to subtly change for each monologue because there's 10 monologues and maybe have little things on the outfits to kind of reflect the time around him because looking at him, you're going to go, what the fuck year are we in?
Yeah, I know exactly.
Sure. It's like it's the year timeless.
Isn't
it crazy? Because I was watching a bunch of them again today, and I was just like, you could see guys like thinking nothing of it wearing these things. These exact,
I know.
Style really does hold
it
up.
It is timeless.
And also, just like the kind of like camp of it, like the monologue that you did in the cemetery, and you have this sort of vampiric.
And the incredible hair.
Incredible. Yes. And you look just like an actress. And I can't.
Actress.
And, like, I want to say Catherine O'Hara, that's wrong. Oh. But there's another actress that's like
Pola Negri.
Let's say Pola Negri. Let's say Miss Pola. But just the hair, the moment, the cape moment, like the open thing. I live for it.
Well, when you say that Buddy is timeless, is unchanging, is constant.
Yeah.
How does that square with the way that you change as a human being? Like, is that, I don't know, how does that negotiate, or how does that stay relative to
I have to separate the two. Like, I've got to make sure that I don't inject too much into him.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, of course, it's a part of me.
It is, sure. Yeah,
but, you know, I don't want, there's things that Buddy might say that I might go, I don't really agree with that.
Sure.
But it's a character.
Yeah.
I have to let the characters breathe.
Sure.
I have to let him say what he has to say.
Right.
And I know that I write what he says.
Yes.
But there is a part of my brain when I'm Buddy, it's weird. He's like smarter than me.
Oh,
you know.
I was watching an interview that you did, and reading an interview that you did, and you said, you know, he's the smartest person in the room. And I was like, yeah, but that doesn't feel like vain at all to say. This is just like an extension of you and it's almost like, yes, when you allow yourself to write a character, it's like these things that you don't even, that wouldn't even occur to you in life do occur to you. And it does seem like another person that is you.
Yeah, and all the roadblocks that I find in my life and all the ways that I trip myself up.
Yeah.
He just doesn't worry about those. I mean, he's a guy that was born in a very, very difficult time. Born into war, basically. Uh-huh. My generation we're screwed.
Yeah.
I mean, we all have PTSD. But Buddy was born into this kind of like cauldron.
Yes.
And this effeminate man, you know, from the country, from a rural area. I mean, I really know his life.
Yeah.
And then but he knew who he was from day one.
Yeah.
He was never in the closet.
Mm-hmm.
He emerged fully formed. And no matter what happened to him, no matter what kind of bullshit people threw at him, he was always like, it just, water off a duck's
back.
He
survived.
He's a survivor.
Yeah.
He's absolutely resilient.
Yeah.
And there's nothing that really will stop him.
Wow.
And he's like the best of me.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And he earns that. And you, by proxy, earn being able to really say whatever it is that you want.
Well, that's the thing right now. Like I was saying to Robin, my director, he's always saying to me, you're going to get in trouble. Like, when are the SJWs going to come after you? Because my show is appalling.
Yeah, I can't wait.
I mean, it just, I don't spare anyone.
Yeah.
And Buddy just tramples in every taboo, everything you're not supposed to say. And for a white man at my age, that I'm allowed to say this, no white guys can say this anymore, right? But I'm a gay man, and I'm not just a gay man like you guys. Uh-huh. I'm an older gay man,
right.
So I'm a war survivor.
Yeah.
Like, you look at me, and you might go, I don't like that, but you go, he's missing a leg.
Mm-hmm.
You gotta listen to Gramps.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
And so it's a kind of for comedy today, which is so tiptoey. Everyone's tiptoeing, and I just go, oh, I don't care if there's quicksand. I'm going swimming.
But then, so when Robin asks you that, I mean, is your answer like, well, it doesn't, that's besides the point. Like, it's not even about.
Like, I kind of want to get it over with.
Uh-huh.
But then I might not even have to.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Because people, and the moment, and the thing is, it's a superpower in comedy today because everyone's so delicate.
Yeah.
And I've earned it.
Yeah, yeah.
And it is true. It's like, it's just, I'm a war vet. I've earned it. So I don't care. Yeah. If you go, you can't say that. I go, I just did.
Yeah.
And it's just a joke.
It's just,
just jokes.
Yeah. So, starting out,
right,
when you started out, and you really were the first, you know, gay sketch comedian.
Well, actually, in comedy, there was no one. There was anywhere in comedy.
No one.
So what's the response?
Women, but not men.
Right.
It's a very, very different thing.
I totally agree with
you.
They're
not even
remotely
the same.
Mm-hmm. I totally agree. Mm-hmm. Now, what's the response from other comics when you start to, you know, have success with Kids in the Hall?
Like, when I began?
Yeah.
Oh, it's ugly.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's up. Yeah. See, when I was very young, even before I met the kids in the hall, mm-hmm. you know, I went to acting school. I wanted to be an actor. I wanted to be a serious actor, and I wanted to be funny on talk shows. I never wanted to be a comedian. Uh-huh. I didn't think it was possible.
Uh-huh.
A comedian talks about his life. I can't talk about my life.
Yeah, who's going to want to hear it? Right.
I mean, I came out. I spent my whole life fighting the urge to kill myself, basically, thinking that I was the worst thing on earth. Then when I finally had the courage to do it, suddenly you're hit by this plague that tells you that everything society says about you is true.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just a double whammy.
Yeah.
So I just thought, I can't. And the homophobia of the 80s and 90s, it was breathtaking. And I really thought that, oh, it's going to, this is what people have to know, that society can flip back 30 years on a dime.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. You have to be very careful. Mm-hmm. I mean, things can just switch like that. And that's what happened. So I did try to do stand-up comedy. Mm-hmm. And I went 3 times to open mics.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, I was so terrified that I wouldn't even perform as myself. I performed as Manny Coon, who was my first character,
okay.
Who's a very masculine man, like a bull, like a big alpha artist. And I talk, you know, in a real masculine way, and I drink and I smoke. I really had to cover myself up. And even so, the comedians could still tell that I was gay.
Uh-huh.
Not when I'm on stage, but backstage before I put on my, you know, my male mantle. And they were so evil to me.
Oh God!
And I remember they introduced me as, they said, our next comedian just gave us all a blowjob backstage. I wasn't even out, right? So they immediately telegraphed to the audience, "This is a faggot."
Mm-hmm.
And in those days, every comic had a faggy voice mm-hmm. that they did. Every stand-up club. A comedian would pick, if there was a solo male, he always became Lance or Bruce. Those were the two gay names. And they would single him out. And so every show was like that. The homophobia was just literally everywhere.
Rampant.
In the audience with the comedians. And then the second time, I didn't do well. Second time, I did a little better. And then the third time, this is what happened. The comedian introduced me. And after my set, he wiped the mic and said, I'm wiping the AIDS germs off.
Jesus Christ. And you know what? What's crazy is I bet at the time you weren't even like, fuck that. You were just kind of like, well, that's what they do. That's what they say.
Yeah, I was both.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because,
I was both.
The thing about you, Scott, is that you dug your heels even deeper.
Well, exactly. And because that night, that was a terrible, and that was the last time I did stand up comedy until many years later, mm-hmm. when the world changed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I remember being called a faggot by the, and someone said, shut up, faggot. And I lost it. And I jumped out off the stage and I knocked their beers off and I got into it.
Oh, yeah.
And I just realized after these incidents, I just can't do this.
The energy wasn't worth it.
There's
yeah.
no possible way I can do this. And I just met the kids in the hall and I didn't even really know that I was capable of doing characters. Mm-hmm. I thought I was going to be a movie star. I wasn't yeah. going to do characters.
Right.
But I met them and I thought it was love at first sight. Mm-hmm. And I thought, this is my future.
Wow.
And I realized maybe in a subconscious way that I could bury myself in this team, like a hockey lineup.
Yes.
And I could be a great player, but I can only do this in a team right now uh-huh. because the world will not accept that.
Right.
And so once I met them, that was it. I shut the door on the other side.
Lovely. Was there any sort of, I've always been curious, was there any sort of thought as to, because I feel like with me and Matt, we have this fun little coterie of queer comedians now, and we're so lucky to have that group and that camaraderie.
You really are.
We are.
And I'm thrilled for you, you know.
Oh, thank you. But
just you two, not the other ones.
Yeah, no. Sure. Not even name. I forgot their names.
Good.
But yeah. It's best two.
But then we do share space with, like, a straight comedian group. Like, there is this level of switching up our code a little bit where it's like the behaviors change.
Yes. Yeah.
And so was there ever that level with the kids in the hall where it
yes.
was
at the even the kids in the hall, you know, everybody, we're all on a journey, people change. It's not like they just said, yeah, we'll bring you in. It wasn't like that. Yeah. It was a process.
So then how would you pitch the things like I want to be Queen Elizabeth in drag, I want to do Buddy Cole, I want to be a secretary, you know, like.
Well, it was a gradual thing.
Yeah.
The first person that wanted me to be a member of the group was Mark McKinney. Yeah. He saw me perform at Theater Sports, and I was like a real wild man at the time. I would wear pantsuits that would be slit down to here, so I'd be half naked. I'd wear strands of pearls. I'd glue cigarette butts to my ears. I was a weird combination of everything, and I was openly gay. That's when nobody was, and I just didn't give a shit. And they would we would do Theater Sports. I was on a theater sports team, and they would always if you did something that they thought was untoward or, you know, like too provocative, they would give you a zero. And anytime anything gay came up, that was immediately unacceptable. So I was constantly being zeroed and all the rest of it. But Mark saw that and went, wow, that guy's that's a punk.
Yeah.
And so and he because
it was punk rock to be gay.
Yes, it was. And so he brought me in, but they were not, the others were not aboard.
Really?
And, you know, there was a lot of hazing that went on. I can just, let me just leave it at that.
Sure.
And there were some ugly things that occurred.
Okay.
But over time, and when I did Buddy Cole, I did Fran, I did Manny. Mm-hmm. And I guess they started to realize, he's got some. But I did monologues at the time. But I was very out of control. I had no control. I didn't know how to be in a group.
Right.
And then, but I had a bag of wigs and dresses.
Mm-hmm.
And they had already started to play women, but it was very differently. But once I came aboard, because for me, it was for them, it was a huge deal. For me, like as gay men, I'm like, well, it's natural for me to like play a woman, play a man. Sure. I don't see any. I don't really see the big difference. Of course, half my characters are women.
Yes. Sure.
That's natural.
Yeah.
And so that kind of they took that on in a way.
Wow.
And in a strange way. Their acceptance of homosexuality and cross-dressing and all the rest of the things that we did became a punk thing.
Yes.
Like a punk thing. You know what I mean? Like it became like a fuck you.
Yes.
Mm. And to guys that were so home, it was like they would kiss each other.
Right.
And that was really a fuck you to men, to basically society.
To the patriarchy, yes.
And so they realized that this was a kind of a way to rebel.
Right.
And so, but then once I was aboard, it was about 6 months. One night they took me out. They made up a song. They sang me a song and said, "You're in the kids in the hall." And that was it. And that was it. And I took the key. I swallowed it. And no one was ever getting back in again.
Yeah.
And I knew that was it. I was like, I was blowing that entrance up because I was no one was getting in.
Yeah.
Right.
And I knew this was it for life.
Wow.
And we were still together and we're still talking
Absolutely.
About a reboot and, you know, so it is exciting.
Very exciting. But just the fact that you had to be in this proving ground for a while is
it, you know,
kind of, yeah.
And it still exists.
Of course it does.
You know what? I think there's like, who was I just? I was just saying yesterday, I got on the phone because someone wanted to talk to get my take on the Hannah Gadsby situation.
Sure. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And
I like calling it a situation.
Yeah,
it's better than calling it a comedy special.
Well, it's become this whole thing now where it's like, you know, I just feel like. There's the special, and you can have your thoughts on the special. Everyone has their thoughts on the special. But then it's so funny to me that, like, that there's this whole thing of, like, well, you know, she shouldn't even be up there on the stage. It's like, okay, you don't like it, you don't like it. But for her to get up there and be able to do what she's doing,
right.
Like, it's harder for her than you straight white dudes can ever conceive of because sure. You've never had to have a second thought about walking into a room and taking up all the space as yourself.
Right.
Whereas there's everyone else in the world, and it's just like it's so different.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
To walk in and have to filter yourself.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And it takes such a long time. It's such a you know, so I'm not surprised to hear that even though these guys seem so open-minded, it was still a process in the beginning because they are who they are.
They're men. They're straight men.
Yes.
They're products of their time.
Yep.
You know, they could, you know, you have to let people, everyone's like on a journey. You can't, mm-hmm. People shouldn't be judged by the way they were 10 years ago, 15 years ago. That's society.
Yeah,
society.
No,
most people
not.
Just follow the what everyone in society tells them to do.
Yeah.
And they didn't know any better.
Yeah.
But I have not, we all learned together and mm-hmm. I had things to learn as well. But I think what helped me was I come from a family of 5 boys. Mm-hmm. So I understood mm-hmm. how males behave in a group.
Mm-hmm.
And I know how to, I guess I'm a fighter.
Yeah.
And that was very important. And I mean, it might not be politically correct to say it, but I think one of the things that made them accept me was they knew that if it got into a scrap, I could hurt all of them very badly.
I feel that I could fight a lot of my street friends.
Oh, I think you'd be like, you'd go ratchet.
I would, yeah. I'd
curb stomp.
I would.
Oh, no. Like, gay rage, once it's unleashed, I'm sorry.
Even gay Canadian rage?
Like, oh, it's the worst.
it's the worst.
Because it's even, because these people, their rage is so close to the surface.
Yes, yes.
And
yes.
they yeah. love it and they nurture
right.
it. We bury it.
Ooh,
so when it comes roaring up, it's like a vein of lava that's come from the center of the earth.
Sure.
Their vein of lava is just under the surface.
Yeah,
like right under. Oh, look at this piece of loam. Look, there's lava right under it. Loam. Yeah. I said loam. But, you know, but I think gay rage is a terrifying thing.
I actually have been writing characters recently again, and what I'm realizing is it's easiest for me to operate in a place of anger.
Oh, yeah. Or any strong
actually,
emotion.
Like, well, not actually, no.
Okay.
Not any strong emotion. Like, a few of the things I've been writing lately, I'm like, well, I can't do these all in a set together because everyone's screaming. Everyone's mad and pissed. And I was just like, what is that? I think, what is that, like, sort of, like, I think maybe it's a couple things. It's observing
mm-hmm.
that kind of, like, very available, like, masculinity in the world from an early age.
Absolutely. And I think with gay men particularly, I think one of the reasons why I've struggled with my temper
mm-hmm.
and why I have such a close relationship to rage, one of the things is I made this very terrible connection as a child between rage and masculinity.
Yes.
And I felt so, you know, that I felt so demasculinized
mm-hmm.
I thought, well, I can't be a complete faggot because I'm scary in a fight.
Yes, yes.
Sure,
which is not a great connection
to make.
But
that's the math that you do.
That's the math that I
do. Do you know what's normalized, which is so insane? This is normalized. The thing of screaming at a television set because the sports team you like is losing.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
Like, that's true. Normalized.
It is normal.
What a crazy behavior.
Like, it's insane.
But don't you scream at the TV when the actress wins the Oscar?
Yeah, 100%, yes.
Come on.
I do.
And it's always the wrong
actress. Always the wrong one.
Very, very nearly always.
Who do we say?
Let me tell you something. I don't care if she deserves it or not.
No.
If Lady Gaga doesn't win this year, I'm furious.
Oh, sure. Matt's,
I want to burn the whole Oscars down. Lady Gaga should win Best Actress.
Have you seen it yet?
No. No. I've seen the trailer.
See, this is that rage we're talking about.
That's what I'm
that?
Saying. It's because I know that she's close to queer, and so
I'm like,
she should win.
Uh-huh,
and I root for, you know what? This is another thing, and I want to get your take on this too. Did you ever find that, like, it was almost harder to root for the people that were closest to you because of the spaces that were limited spaces.
The more I love someone, the more difficult it is for me to tell them that or to praise them because I was raised in a way with my parents that, you know, that it spoils people.
Yeah.
That if you get too much praise, it will spoil you.
Yeah.
And so it's hard for me. I've learned, I've tried very hard because I always go, I think they did a great job. I don't want to tell them because they'll get soft.
I'm specifically talking about gay men, though.
Oh, gay men are the worst. I mean, I'm just going to say that a blanket statement. We're the worst to each other.
Wow. We really are.
Terrible. Yeah.
We've had such a good experience because our friends in the New York queer comedy we're very supportive, but then you go out to like LA.
Right.
Those gays are not supportive of
us. Well, I mean, this is the thing. I think there are changes happening, but you guys know as gay comics, we still have a ceiling. There's not one of us has become a star.
No.
There has never been a gay male, an openly gay male. Comedy stuff.
You're absolutely right.
Ever. Mm-hmm. There are no one on Netflix. Never. And one of the reasons is us.
Yes.
Because we do not support other gay men.
Guy Branum says,
unless they're in drag or they're a prostitute, a hustler, or a porn star.
Or fucking hot as fuck.
Dumb as fuck.
Yeah.
Because we worship dumb and hot and young. But if you're talent, no, because every gay man thinks they're a star. Yeah. Right, I'm like, I'm funny too. No, you're not, bitch.
Yeah,
I mean, and I didn't mean to say bitch, I'm in the vote.
It's our favorite word.
We toss it out. But all the time.
But you know, like people assume they go, your shows must be filled with gay men. I go, hardly a couple.
Wow,
like I have a tiny gay following,
sure.
But very small. It's overwhelmingly straight people. Mm-hmm. But we don't support ourselves. So how can a community that isn't supported by its community ever supposed to reach that level?
Right, right.
Like all we do is support women. Like we'll not go see a gay male make us laugh.
Sure.
Only a woman. And I think that's kind of tragic.
It is.
In a way.
And it's not even a thing of like there's not enough support to go around because the women deserve the support that we give them. But also...
No, they got enough.
No, they got enough. You're right. Scott's right.
Yeah, they got enough.
You have had it.
Yeah, you know what? You know what? No, don't top it up. You're filled to the brim. You know what? In fact, I see your meniscus.
I see your meniscus. Yeah. You know, Kathy Griffin's selling out places in New Zealand.
Stop it now!
The woman has sold it. We thought she was over. No, she was back.
No, she's back,
Carnegie
baby.
Hall, hon.
And good for her.
No, I'm just kidding.
I did... You mentioned this. You mentioned.
But may I say one thing before it sounds like I've completely sunk into bitterness, which
I haven't.
It's the idea that I am starting to see gay men come. And there's always been a few gay men of my generation and people below, who followed the kids in the hall. But now I'm starting to see young ones like you guys that are coming, and that thrills me to death. I'm like going, maybe this generation might be able to not hate themselves so deeply.
I want you to know that it's changing. I want you to know from my heart that it's changing. And you know what I mean? Like, I love like all of our friends and I think everyone's so talented and you know, it's just,
and that doesn't, that, it's, that's
I take
not
inspiration
lost on us.
From
yeah.
them.
That's not lost on us because we have like in years past, like come up against that thing where it's like, oh, we're not getting that support from within our own community.
Yeah.
I do hope that now it is changing too.
And we'll be told things like, well, you know, we couldn't get so-and-so, and so we asked this person, and they couldn't do it, and you know, then we asked you, and of course, there's only the one spot in this cast for one of you.
Right.
And things like that, and people don't understand, like, what they're really saying, or they think that we know it, and so they can...
They can say it.
It's just like, it's this idea of, like, you know, when you do these things, when you set up these situations, we go back to each other, and we commiserate about it, and you're actually the joke.
Sure.
And it will turn. It will change. Yeah. I think that you're right. We still a little bit have that disease of this thing of unless a gay man is in drag, they cannot become a star.
No
one is out there finger waving for, I mean, I guess.
For James Adomian or Guy Branum or you guys. They're just not.
Yeah.
And it's like, I go, if Buddy wore a dress, I'd be a superstar.
He
has worn a dress.
He's worn a big collar.
Hey,
Hey, y'all, it's Bowen here. I want to tell you a little bit about Care Of, the service that I am loving right now. Care Of is a monthly subscription vitamin service that delivers completely personalized vitamin and supplement packs right to your door. And just the whole onboarding process is really special, especially their online quiz. Care Of's fun online quiz asks you about your diet, health goals, and lifestyle choices. It takes only 5 minutes to find out what vitamins and supplements you specifically need. I took the online quiz. It was so easy peasy. And did you know that 90% of people fall short of FDA recommended guidelines for at least one vitamin or nutrient? So take Care Of's quiz and get the vitamins you need to get back on track and reach your health goals. Track your progress with the Care Of app and earn rewards when you remember to take your vitamins, and your monthly subscription box can be easily modified at any time. Here's a little peek into my subscription box. You ready? This is Bowen Yang's supplement pack, courtesy of Care Of. I get ashwagandha for my anxiety, rhodiola for, I think, like general mood activity, fish oils, duh, calcium plus. I get calcium because I'm not a milk drinker. I don't love my dairy, so I have calcium, and vitamin C, of course. And of course, there are vegan and vegetarian supplement options available to match your dietary needs. And Care Of offers pre and postnatal supplements with accompanying research to help mothers and babies alike stay their healthiest. Care Of's delicious nutrient-packed quick stick powders can be added to your monthly delivery for an extra easy boost whenever you need it. So here's what you're going to do. You have to take 25% off your first month of personalized Care Of vitamins and go to takecareof.com and enter promo code ding dong. One word, no spaces. That's takecareof.com. Promo code ding dong, DINGDONG. So please, please, please go to takecareof.com. Use promo code DINGDONG to get 25% off your first month of personalized Care Of vitamins and live the Bowen Yang Care Of lifestyle. I don't know what Matt's doing. Matt's, you know what? Matt's vitamins are his chicken fingers, and he is having a blast eating chicken fingers every day. Care Of will eventually expand into the chicken finger market, I'm sure. Now, you mentioned this in a Village Voice interview recently, and this, I think I agree with you. It's real. But let me just say this. Okay. You said, I never found something along the lines of, I never thought that, I always knew that being the first to do something was never going to get me the attention or the money or whatever. It's always the third person.
Third.
Yeah. Second's the real loser position. Because third gets the money and the attention and the praise. Mm-hmm. First is nothing. Like, you know, you look at the Wright brothers, there was someone before the Wright brothers. There was someone that did. Sure, it's always the way. And but at the time, I maybe when I said that, I was pretending to be philosophical about it. Mm-hmm. And pretending that I knew it was going to be like that, but I did not.
Sure.
At the time, I thought, oh my God, once people get a load of what I'm doing, and once the gay community sees what I'm doing, my feet are never going to touch the ground. I'm going to be carried on a litter by gay men. Every gay man I want to sleep with will just go, what do you want to do to me?
Yeah.
And it
break
just,
my arm! Yeah,
it just didn't happen. And it was like such a huge fall for me. And it broke my heart. Like, I went, not only did it not happen, the opposite happened.
Sure,
and
sure.
That broke my heart. Like, in fact, not only did people not support me, but there was this concerted effort, I really believe, to stop me.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And a lot of gay men doing it. And that broke my heart.
See, but then, like, just, I read that quote and that upset me in this way, where I was like, I want to correct, I don't have the power or whatever, the influence to do this, but I want to correct that somehow. Like, we were telling our close friends, like, oh, we have Scott Thompson on this Sunday, and they lit up. They're like, oh my God, what a huge deal. Like, at least you always will have, I think you should, have that respect.
That's it.
I think you can, like, dine out on that for the
rest
of
your life. And I'll tell you the other thing. It's not like, you know, it's not like I was broke or anything, you know, and I've managed.
You worked on television.
I've worked and I've cobbled together a career, and mm-hmm. I've done whatever I had to do as I thought, why can't I go to the next level? And I'll be honest, there was a period in my life when I was consumed by bitterness. Consumed.
Yeah.
And then I got sick.
Yes,
then I went, this is killing me.
Mm-hmm. You think it was part of it?
Absolutely.
Wow.
You do.
I absolutely do. Yeah. So now it's true. Like I'm going like, and I remember when I was young and I'm with Paul Bellini, and he was like, you know, when you're an old man, maybe that's when people will get it. I'm not old yet, but I'm not young anymore. Mm-hmm. But I just thought, yeah, maybe I have to wait. But God, I didn't want to wait.
No,
I wanted it to be when I was young and pretty.
Yeah, of course. I mean, yeah.
Never want to wait.
Now, here's another question. It's like, of course, there's this jealousy aspect. Of, you know, gay men, like, I think a lot of, like, what makes us is, you know, we look up to women, we look up to these actresses and pop stars and glamorous singers and divas and icons. And when we see that one of us gets close to that, I think, of course, there is that thing of jealousy. Yeah. But do you also think that a part of it is protection and wanting to be like, well, that he's going to tell that story and then everyone's going to think that's all of our story?
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
It's like, I think a lot of the reason many people in the gay community did not like me and continue to not like me was that it was a sense of like, oh, he's spilling secrets. He's telling about the darkness. He's, you know, and everybody, and I think that, and they're like, how dare he? He's making us look bad.
Right.
And so they didn't like that.
It's hard to have a sense of humor about yourself when you've been attacked by, I guess, like the straight men for so long. So then they see like, oh, look, he's proving them right.
Yeah.
And they, because we can't see ourselves as these comedic creatures.
No. And I think that's one of the reasons I think gay men love female comics so much is because female comics feed our delusion that we're fabulous.
Sure.
They'll see all of our dysfunction and our ugliness, and they'll go, it's so fabulous that they're cheating on each other.
Yeah.
And how fabulous that they overdosed or whatever.
Sure.
And I mean, they feed our delusions.
It's an external validation.
Yes. Yeah. And they're all, you're all so fabulous, boys. Like when Kathy Griffin goes, my gaze or whatever.
Yeah, yeah,
it's
yeah.
like... You know what I mean? Like, and I don't do that. I'm like, no, we're screwed up, maybe more screwed up than anyone.
Sure.
Yeah.
And I don't take any prisoners, and I don't spare, I'm not going to like spare gay people because, you know, like, well, I don't want people to know how screwed up we are.
Yeah. Sure, sure.
Because that's not what comedy does.
No.
Comedy is about approaching the darkness, bringing stuff out into the light and letting people look at it. That's the kind of comedy that I love.
Yeah.
And God, it's not that scary.
Yeah.
So, but you got, I mean, for a gay man of my generation, what the darkness was
dark
24/7.
Yeah.
I mean, it was definitely the Nazgul were in charge.
The Nazgul were at the door. Like, you're not on the list.
Yeah.
Look,
literally.
You're not on the list.
You're not on the list. Look, there was this, I mentioned this, and this might have been when we talked about Crazy Rich Asians on Patreon, but there was this article that came out, this write up, this whatever think piece that said it's time to forgive the Joy Luck Club. And it was all about how for 25 years, the Joy Luck Club was the only thing that, because Asian people turned their backs on it. They were like, this does not represent us. This is not who we are. This is such a specific experience that does not represent the entire
community.
Like
they did on Margaret Cho in a way.
Yes, you know?
Exactly.
Absolutely.
And this is the thing about being first or being the only thing that's representative of a community or an experience is that you cannot be saddled with all of this expectation and this responsibility.
Yeah.
And God, like, it sucks that it just, there always has to be, I'm not saying that this was you, but there always has to be that one thing that is the pincushion for everyone else's bullshit. Like,
yeah.
I think that's what we have to sort of get past. And like, I think in order to write this, like, we have to just sort of like honor the those things in the past. And I don't know.
It's a conscious decision to change that way of thinking.
Yes.
You know what I mean? This thing that represents you is not attacking you or killing
you,
or it doesn't occupy one space. And I think if there's something that's good about like the way that the entertainment industry has expanded and social media and all these like different kind of spaces is now there is so much room and so many platforms. You got to fill it with something.
Yeah.
So, and there's only so many of these like voices that have filled the you know previously small spaces,
sure.
And now that's like if you want gay content, there are networks for where that is. Obviously, they should be on every network,
right.
But you know, like it's something.
Yeah,
I don't know. It's
yeah.
It's a mind fuck.
It's a mind fuck. speaking of this
fucks the mind.
Speaking of content, I guess. Well, we ask all of our guests this question, which is, what was the culture that made you say culture is for me? Matt, do you want to explain the question?
Yes. Okay. So this is, you know, this is the, it could be a movie, it could be a piece of music, could be a particular person in pop culture, or just like, you know, just your surroundings and upbringing that culturally made you to say, okay, this is who I am. I'm stepping into culture as me, and it was this defining thing that made me that way.
You mean, like, what do you mean?
Like, for people that have different kinds of answers to this question. For example, if on any given day I could say, growing up on Long Island, that really formed me. Or
I could say,
I really got obsessed with the reality show Survivor, and that made me the person I am. Like, whatever. Things like
that. It's a broad question. It's very broad. But even, like, were you, even, like, a Canadian upbringing, for example?
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
What about you and your Canadian upbringing?
Oh, God.
Was there anything specifically Canadian?
Specifically Canadian? It was Celine for me.
Celine?
Because it was going to Notre Dame in Montreal and being, and like going on field trips to that church and having
Celine affected us too.
And having our teacher, well, of course, but in Quebec, it was like,
inescapable.
The one.
Yeah.
But she's the one. On field trips, like the teachers would be like, this is where Celine got married. And we'd be like, wow. Like that was.
That just reminds me of an A to Seeing here. You did a fucking amazing interview on Conan where you had some incredible jokes about Leonardo DiCaprio, that twink. Really, the first twink.
The first twink.
Really, the first
he
twink.
Is our first twink.
Well, I guess River Phoenix was the first twink.
The first twink in the contemporary imagination.
You know what? You can go back through twinks throughout time.
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, James Dean, twink.
Yeah. A Caravaggio painting, all twinks.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes.
Hercules and Newt. That was for you. Newt was the first. And he's a centaur.
Yes.
You know,
a centaur twink.
And the David versus Goliath.
Is it a fawn? Is it a fawn or a centaur?
A satyr? No, a fawn.
It's fawn, yeah.
Yeah.
I guess when I was comedy, I would say Carol Burnett.
Okay, yeah, that's
maybe
a great
or
answer.
Flip Wilson. Those were my two totems of comedy.
Wow.
Yeah. Flip Wilson made me laugh like crazy, and he played Geraldine, and he played female and male characters.
Yes, I loved him.
And you connected with that just
very much so. Yeah. Yeah. Wow. Geraldine and Carol Burnett. Those are my two. It wasn't even stand-ups, really, because I didn't have stand-up albums or anything like that. Mm-hmm. I wasn't even like a music. It was actually books for me. Books.
Uh-huh.
I get for me, I'm a huge reader. The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe would have been another one.
Great.
Narnia.
Favorite book in the series?
Prince Caspian.
Okay.
Yeah.
Twink.
And Voyage.
Twink.
And I like, I think Prince Caspian was the first
twink.
Literary twink.
Yeah, literary twink. Powerful.
Tom Sawyer.
Tom Sawyer. Prince Caspian was the first Christian allegory twink.
Right.
Yeah.
Who's the twink? Huck Finn or Tom Sawyer?
Oh, Tom Sawyer.
Okay, Tom Sawyer
Huck
was the
Finn
twink.
Huck Finn is the first piece of white trash. Hot white trash.
Hot white trash.
Yeah.
That the gays
Jason
love.
Stackhouse.
Yeah, absolutely. Hot white trash.
Hot white trash. Didn't JTT play Tom Sawyer?
Jonathan Taylor Thomas.
Twink, another 90s twink.
Yeah.
And Huck and Finn.
Yeah.
Oh my God, when they tried to sex up the Huckleberry Finn novel.
You don't need to. It's all there.
I got to revisit.
Oh, I reread it every couple of years.
Yeah. Oh, good. Yeah. Wait, what are your big revisity books? I mean, how often do you reread something?
Not a lot, but that's definitely. I do go back to the Narnia books, which is weird. And I've read Lord of the Rings 3 times.
Wow.
I've read Dune 3 times. I'm a real nerd.
Oh, so then you love your fantasy.
I love science fiction and fantasy, the chrysalids, that sort of stuff.
Are you a Star Wars queen?
No.
See, Luke Skywalker, that's a twink.
Very much a twink, yeah.
Dagobah system!
I don't like twinks. I found him bland. For me, it was all but Harrison Ford.
Oh, for sure.
Sure, of course.
You know, I always like men. Like, I was like Liz Taylor. I like all my men 40.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
He's always been 40. He's still 40 to this day.
She liked men at 40 when she was 20. She liked men that were 40 when she was 60.
Wow. 100.
I'm not saying I'm Liz Taylor. But
that's what you said. No, that's what you said.
Okay, I did say it. I might say it. Well, look at me. I can't hide my violet eyes.
Your Oscar for Butterfield 8, you brought it with you.
I did.
Yeah, it's here. It's on the table.
Everyone knows
this one's bullshit.
It's not the one I deserved it for.
No, no. You can make an argument about that. You
that's
know, Kathleen Turner's out there making that argument.
Oh, what an interview.
That was a great interview.
Talk about like a gay icon.
Oh, sure.
That's one we forgot. The children have forgotten Kathleen.
Have. We need to remind them.
We don't need to remind them. She reminded them.
She's also Jessica Rabbit, people.
Yeah, come on.
Have some respect.
Body heat, darling.
Now, it's interesting that you mentioned Flip Wilson because I feel like, and it's interesting that you mentioned.
He's been forgotten.
He's, well, yes, that. Yeah. I mean, even I will admit that I don't have that familiarity with Flip.
Right.
With Flip Wilson. But the fact that you mentioned the drag aspect and that you, and that, like, that goes, like, you compare that to maybe the way that the other kids in the hall conceived of drag as maybe more of, like, a Monty Python analog.
Yes, yes.
Whereas maybe you were probably the one to, like, elevate that out of this, like,
well, yeah, I didn't think of it as a caricature.
Yeah.
And I think from day one we were like, and I don't know if it was really me that, I think they all kind of, when they first started doing women, they all wanted to just play women as women.
Yes.
Okay.
And you know, I'd love to claim that for myself.
Sure.
And I think maybe, so I maybe helped them deepen it. Like, I helped them, I, in a way, maybe, like, let go of that kind of, like, masculine. I gotta, like, you know, like a movie like Tu Wong Fu, for example.
Yeah, right.
You know, like the way that Wesley Snipes telegraphs the audience with his guns. That, don't remember, I'm still a man.
Of course.
Yeah. Like, we didn't want any of that telegraph.
Sure.
We wanted to, like, completely submerge ourselves into our characters.
Yeah. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And, but definitely, I think, we're not like Monty Python. We are very much like Monty Python. But in terms of the portrayal of women, we took it further.
Yes.
We didn't have screechy voices. I mean, they used to do some women that were pretty damn real, but most of the women were more caricature.
Right, yes. Right.
And when we first got on television, our first wardrobe person who did not work out, all of our female costumes, she tried to make them like all like silly, like big tits.
Like draggy.
Yeah, draggy. Yeah, yeah. We were like, and we were furious. We were like, no, we're not doing it. We go, wow. And then we'd work on something. She'd go, oh, that's, she go, it's boring looking. Yeah, it's a boring woman.
Yeah, this is not, and this is, it's a real woman.
Yeah,
right. Right.
Or it's the portrayal of a real,
like,
woman.
Yes. Women aren't fabulous.
Sure. A woman that you would see on the street, like, oh yeah, just a woman.
And that was a profound, I mean, that was one of the greatest journeys that we all took, that journey into gender. Like, wow, this is fun.
Right.
Do you think that had you not been on the group, maybe they wouldn't have got there?
It might not have gotten as far.
Sure.
No, they wouldn't have gone as far.
Because you know, with you, it's like secretary sketch. I feel like Bruce, was it Bruce? You and Bruce?
Yeah, yeah. Me and Bruce.
I feel like Bruce put on some sort of feminine affect, which is fine. Like, it worked for the character.
It does.
But for you, like, you didn't really change anything.
I don't. Like, Kathy, I'm not really doing anything.
Yeah. Right.
No.
I use my voice. I lighten it a little bit.
Yeah, right.
Barely, yeah.
Barely.
Yeah. But as a secretary, not as, like, a woman.
No.
You know what I mean? You're playing the secretary.
Yeah.
You're not playing a woman.
And Kathy's not overtly feminine.
Sure,
no,
she's
sure.
Kind of an alpha female.
Yes,
and
she asked the questions.
Yes,
right, right.
But it's true. Like with me and Bruce, the balance. Each one, I think he made me funnier in terms of Kathy's funny, but she's not. Bruce's character is much more overtly funny.
Yes, yes.
But I think my Kathy made Bruce's more realistic.
Absolutely.
Right. And those two, they were yin and yang.
Yeah.
And they really matched each other.
Yeah.
And but my Kathy came about through him. His Kathy was first.
I see.
Then my Kathy came after, mm-hmm. And then that's when the secretaries were actually kind of born all at once in a weird way, because it was in the very first piece called, which was about turning over,
mm-hmm.
And it was the first time all five of us were in drag, and it was a very remarkable moment, and it was about five secretaries, mm-hmm. And I don't even think, and then we took on, they weren't really people yet,
yeah,
right? Bruce's was starting to be a person, but I found the wig, and you guys know
it's the wig, honey.
Yeah, I fell in love with that wig, and all the character flowed from the wig.
Yes,
it's so true.
And it was this scene about the character Bruce is like, oh my god, what's going on? I'm about to turn over, and it was like a turnover, and it was basically like a clock when it goes from like 3:59 to 4.
Sure, yeah, sure.
And she had it in the back of her head, and it was, she turned over, and we all were giving her a birthday party. But I remember we all came out together, and we were like seeing each other as women, five of us, and this kind of natural, we became nicer to each other.
Yes, the energy changes.
It all changed, and all those five, because there's five women in that secretarial pool, and those were all the looks were pretty much settled that day.
Yeah.
They didn't have names yet,
yeah.
But Dave had that red wig. And Kevin had that black wig, and
Mark's gray, that curly wig,
gorgeous wig.
That Tanya wig.
Tanya,
and I love that Tanya sketch.
Tanya's great.
Too.
Oh my god,
Tanya, she is.
What was it? Mondays. Huh? So good.
The Tanya sketch where she's at the party and she's trying to get you guys to give her the weed.
That's the. Oh, that's
so
a great.
Good.
Yeah, yes. But you know, but we. I don't know what we're.
But like,
I don't know.
I'm so glad you noticed the Kathy thing. I'm not doing anything.
Right.
No, but and you know what?
That's really me.
That's how that woman exists in the world. But sure. It's so true because like these small shifts that happen just when you put the wig on. I had to do it actually at the duplex. No, wait, not the duplex. Yes, it was at the duplex. It wasn't at Joe's Pub. I did drag years ago, Liz Suedo's dress.
Oh, that's right, Liz. Yeah.
And I would get in the full dress and I guess they were like go-go boots. They weren't even heels. I couldn't find anything for me. I had the wig and she was like, wow, you really change when you put that on. And it was weird. I got very self-conscious about it because I was 5 years younger than I am now, mm-hmm. 6 years younger. And it was like, oh no, like... Am I revealing?
This is my future.
Am I revealing something about myself, or am I too good at this? Yeah. Or like, it's this thing
too good at drag? No, I understand what you're saying.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Where it's like, you want to take yourself seriously, and the world has made you think that you can't be serious doing this thing. You know what I mean? Like, I think a lot of like, as a gay actor, gay performer, gay comedian, I think we all kind of like have the same dreams and goals as anyone else that's in the entertainment industry. You want to have like a mainstream career. You want to be mainstream successful.
Yeah.
So when you find like a niche or a success or a skill in doing something that's historically not that.
Yeah.
In fact, it's drag is literally outside the mainstream, makes fun of the mainstream.
Yes.
You're like, oh no, naturally, like, what are my real skills?
Sure, sure, sure.
So it was this moment of like, she was trying to compliment me and be like, wow, you're really the character. That's great. But it was this thing in my head, like the gay man inside me was like,
yeah.
Shamed.
Well, I remember the first time I started doing Buddy Cole, I'd never done that gay accent before. Mm-hmm. I think most gay men have gay voices. I don't think that's that controversial.
Sure,
I think most of us.
No, I don't know. I actually don't know what you're talking about.
I mean, except for myself, right?
Not for me, though.
I first started doing the voice. Well, of course you did. Come on. The faggot on the left. Of course, I mean, Jesus Christ.
But you know, when I first started doing that, it was the lisp because I thought, oh, if I start talking like that, it'll be, the wind will change and it'll be like that for the rest of my life. And I was terrified of doing that. Like, I would never ever imitate that because I always thought, well, I've spent my whole life trying to pass, and I've spent my whole life trying to present as masculine, that I can't do that because then all of the defenses will fall away and I'll be revealed as a shrieking queen.
What a fascinating experience to like that we all kind of share, which is to be born, grow into yourself, realize that's horrible, and then create this other person that you are, exist in that for 7, 8, 9, 10 years, which is how long I did, and then have to reestablish and refine who you are again.
Oh, you should both read. Have you read Covering by Kenji Yoshino?
No.
Yeah, he's a Yale. I guess he's just.
I'm
like
already
a,
turned off.
Okay. No, he's
you're
a,
boring, bitch.
He's a legal scholar at Yale, but he wrote this book that's about the stages of coming out. Of coming out, and then maybe of trying to like. Path of like having this phase where you sort of are trying to negotiate whether you want to pass or not, and then the final sort of freeing moment is
I've never gotten to that moment.
Yeah. Maybe I haven't either.
I don't know if I'm capable of it any longer.
Well, I think it's
I did for a while.
The final moment is just about not caring about passing.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
And I think you're saying that you haven't gotten to that place.
No,
your masculine characters are quite masculine.
I know. I think I've studied men my
you're
whole
great
life.
Actor.
I love playing those characters, and I thought that maybe society would allow me to, but they did not.
Right.
You know, they said no. You're going to play the neutered fag who lives next door who tells the main character how to live or what dress to wear.
Right.
You know, and
that's because that's how we know you.
Yeah, but you know, in terms of like, I had to because. If I had to kill everything feminine in me in order to survive, in a way, and I wasn't very successful at it, you know. Like I mean, because I just didn't want to get beat up. You know, I had four brothers. I lived in like a hockey camp. It was very different. And anyone to be a homosexual male at that time was the worst thing that a man could be.
Yeah, you were disgusting.
You were disgusting.
I think that's something that people don't. Understand is that, you know, once you realize what you are, and you not only like do you get slapped over the head with how much society hates it, It's they hate it because they're disgusted by it. You know, they don't hate it because it doesn't, you know, it's not in their religious beliefs or whatever about that's a cover. They hate it because they're disgusted with the idea behind how we have sex.
It's sodomy.
Yeah.
It's all about sodomy.
Yeah.
This is what people don't you say, you can't take that out of the equation.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And that's where I think we kind of went wrong, this whole gay marriage is fine, but you can't take sodomy out of it. And that's one of the key differences between the way women are gay females.
Absolutely.
And gay males.
Sure.
They don't engage in sodomy. Oh, they can!
Because their sex isn't disgusting.
It's not
right.
Disgusting. We're yeah. disgusting.
Yes, and they see
and,
us disgusting.
And I think that the gay movement has tried very hard to distance ourselves from basically ground zero. You cannot. We're going to have to face it. Mm-hmm. The society's going to have to face we fuck each other
in the
ass.
Asshole.
Okay?
100%.
And you can't dress it up with love wins.
Yeah.
Sodomy fucking wins.
Sodomy
it's about,
wins.
Sodomy wins, title of
it. It's about
sodomy
fucking.
Wins.
And my theory is that sodomy is the original sin. This is my TED Talk.
Here you go. Please, please.
It's the reason the male homosexual is the most, I think, benighted, and I said benighted.
Benighted.
Creature on, blighted, benighted, lowest creature on the planet is because of sodomy.
Yeah.
And it's the ultimate sin. My belief, in terms of the Bible, in terms of the original sin, if you go back to Adam and Eve,
yeah.
This is my theory about the apple. The apple is the anus. That when Adam and Eve, I'm not saying this is a real thing, but in terms of these cultural myths and archetypes,
yes.
Here's my theory.
Come on.
That think about the Garden of Eden back then. They didn't have apples like today. They'd be little crab apples.
Yeah.
Little crab apples.
Yeah,
and
tiny.
An anus looks a little bit like a crab.
A little bit.
Apple.
A little
before
bit.
Before it's been trained.
Sure.
And I think that one day, and they didn't know what to do. God was like, I got these two. I got them in this little zoo. I'm going to enjoy watching
I can
them.
See them.
They're never going to have kids,
uh-huh,
so I can
yeah,
watch.
Uh-huh.
And then one day, Eve's bending over the water to like, I don't know, pick up a flower to put in her hair. And
yes.
Somehow her cheeks come apart and he sees that little anus there and he's like, boom! And his penis goes up, his snake.
Yes.
And the snake wants that apple.
Yeah.
And he fucks her and she's like, what the fuck? And they discover a way to have sex without having children.
Yeah.
And that makes God furious because now he can't control them. Because now they have a way to have sex, to give each other
pleasure
without procreation. And that's the original sin. So the snake is the cock, the apple is the anus. And so sodomy is in our subconscious as the ultimate original sin that got us kicked out of the Garden of Eden. So naturally, the homosexual is the devil.
Yes.
It's the snake, which is why this is a very cynical, pessimistic thing to say, that you have to understand that I don't think in our lifetimes we're ever really going to get past that completely.
Okay,
right.
Yeah.
So I've accepted that there's always going to be this level of hatred and visceral disgust,
yes,
towards the homosexual male.
Yep.
And in order for me to have a good life, I have to accept that it's always going to be there. And in order for me to live in this world, I have to accept that and find a way to live with that and do everything in my power to change it, but accept that I can only do so much and that society can only change incrementally.
I agree with you 100%.
So, and that's why when people say, oh, lesbians, there's lots of lesbian stars. It's not the
it's
same.
It's not the same.
Because
thing.
There's
you
no sodomy involved.
Don't pretend that gay men and lesbians have the same journey.
No.
It's not true.
And you've said that, for men, for the patriarchy, they view lesbianism as this thing that is somewhat more acceptable than gay male homosexuality.
I think much more.
Because it's like, oh, well, then you're after the same thing
They mimic men.
They mimic men.
So they go
In terms of desire,
that's right?
That's right.
So they go up, they move up the ladder, but a gay male falls from his perch, and a gay white male falls the furthest. because suddenly you're supposed to have the world, and then it's taken away from you. So you plummet. You plummet. Mm-hmm. And so I've accepted that. Like, I mean, it sounds like nihilistic that I would accept it, but I go, I have to live my life. I have to, and I haven't given up.
Sure.
But I accept that there's going to be, because also I don't live in a bubble. You leave the West, and you'll see what real homophobia is.
Oh yeah.
And that's when you go, okay, this is on. This is going to take centuries.
Yeah. Sure, sure.
You know what's crazy? This might make me sound like a lunatic.
Oh, good.
I believe.
Oh, good. Because you've been so sane and measured and calm.
Not a modicum of gay rage.
Here we go.
No.
I think we'll see a lesbian president before we see a gay male president.
Oh, absolutely. Wow. Way more. I totally agree.
I don't think that anyone will ever allow a gay male to lead this country. Lead this great nation.
I'd love a lesbian president.
No,
I'd
not
love
in this
one.
Country. No.
It's so interesting because, like, it's true. It's this thing of the disgust factor. Yeah. And you know,
I'm just so glad we brought sodomy back into
the discussion. Yeah. Sodomy wins. I will say this. Whenever anyone even mentions the name Eminem, I'm like, you have to understand. Like,
the rapper
Eminem.
Of course I know what you're talking about.
I wanted to clarify for the listeners, for everybody.
For the listeners. All right, so listen. when he dictated in popular culture, and he was inescapable.
Oh, he was gigantic.
And this is when I was like forming as like a middle schooler.
That's interesting.
So,
okay.
So mm-hmm. the most popular musician, what people heard in their ears,
right
to the brain, was Eminem saying gay men are disgusting.
Yes.
Disgusting. Lyrics about him using the word faggot, and it's the way you say faggot when you're a straight man. We could say faggot.
Yeah.
Gay men, straight men, they say faggot.
Yeah.
And it hurts.
Yep.
And he would use that word, and he would talk about gays and then follow it up with sound effects like, ugh. And then everyone soaked that in.
Yeah.
It wasn't just him. All hip-hop music. Rap. Let's be honest. Honestly.
Tremendous amounts of, you know, film and television shows, everything. You know, I was also watching that interview with you, and you couldn't say the word tits, but you could say the word faggot.
Of course.
And they would beep out tits.
Yes.
Yeah. And they wouldn't beep out faggot, which is hate speech.
See, they shouldn't. To me, they shouldn't bleep out anything. Yeah.
Mm-hmm, and I agree with you. Mm-hmm, but if we're gonna have standards and practices, wow.
Yeah.
Is tits hurting anyone? Is faggot potentially hurting someone? Yeah. It's different. So it's like, who makes the decisions about this stuff? Who dictates culturally what's happening? It's like, it has been hard. It's tough. And it's only in the past, I think, 3, 4, 5 years, maybe?
3 to 5 years. That's when the penny, something changed 3 to 5 years ago.
Yeah.
I'm not exactly sure what it was culturally that did it, but something, suddenly, we were at the tipping point,
mm-hmm.
and I think suddenly society went, it was like over 50% that said, you know what? That kind of virulent homophobia is not cool.
Yeah.
And something changed.
Right. And who knows what it is. I don't think it was a particular person in pop culture.
No.
I don't think it was, but now it's like, you got, like, this is actually kind of interesting. I'd like your take on it. Do you know Troye Sivan, the pop singer?
Do you know the song Bloom that he just came out with? It's about bottoming. It's about...
It's a huge pop star.
It's a big pop song, I Bloom Just For You. It's
what?
It's all about... It's like the lyrics leading
what?
Up to the chorus.
He was on Saturday Night Live as a musical guest. He's a major
Troye
pop
Sivan.
Star. He's Australian. His name's Troye Sivan. He's actually going to be in the new movie with Nicole Kidman called Boy Erased.
Oh, Boy Erased, about
conversion therapy.
Yes.
He's a major star. He's a pop star. Twink extraordinaire.
Wow.
Yes.
And he is...
I'm blown away.
His big single right now is called Bloom. It's about bottoming.
What?
And everyone knows that it's about bottoming.
He released it. Tweeted about it. Hashtagged bops about bottoming. It's...
Wow, that's...
It's pretty remarkable to me.
That's remarkable. I mean, I'm gobsmacked. I can't even speak.
Great.
Because it's not even about being the top. It's like,
no.
I mean, for God's sake, gay men shame each other for bottoming.
Oh, sure.
Take a trip into my garden. I got so much to show ya. The mountains and the waters. I'm begging just to know ya. It's true, baby. I've been saving this for you.
And then the pre-chorus is all about how he's like, please hold my hand before you like, what is it? Hold my hand before you go in.
I need you to hold my hand if I get scared now. I might tell you to take a second, baby, slow it down. You should know why. You should know why. I bloom. I bloom. Wow. Just
so anyway,
you're actually making me, you're gonna make me cry.
Yeah, right.
Oh, we're gonna listen to it afterwards, and we're gonna have an emotional moment. It's wonderful. It's great. And you know what? When Troye Sivan first came out a few years ago, I was like, who the fuck is this guy? No, thank you. Was doing that thing of I don't want to see another game.
How dare he? Yeah.
But now, like. I think the community at large, like,
and we celebrate him.
I think we're everyone's just starting to rally around this guy. Like, oh, great! Like,
and
this
you know
is
what?
Wonderful.
To the credit of some of the other pop stars that are featuring him, he's on Ariana Grande records. He came out. Taylor Swift brought him out at her concert. They performed "My" together, his other song. Like, you know,
whatever you think about those pop
whatever
stars,
whatever you think about them, they're still it's a fucking bottom pop star, y'all.
A bottom pop star coming out singing about his asshole, his apple.
I see this really shock you.
Yeah, it shocks me.
That's great.
Well, yeah, I actually am. I don't know what to say.
Yeah.
Yeah, I feel like, wow, that's. I didn't even. Maybe it won't take 200 years.
Right. Because
maybe
know what?
Maybe 170.
You know what? Well, for president, I don't know.
Oh no, that's
a pop star. We can get pop star. But the thing is, too, it's like, you know what they've always done is this. Like straight men have always done. What do you mean? There's no gay. What about Elton John? It's like. Yeah, okay, but like he wasn't singing about gay sex.
And I'm
the way
sorry,
that...
Elton John was closeted when I was young. No, he got married. He didn't come out till he was an old man, an old man. But he didn't. No, he no
older.
I mean, Freddie Mercury was in the closet.
Yes. Yep.
And then what about Bowie? Bowie wasn't gay. Bowie just played with gay. Mick Jagger wasn't gay. They might have sucked one cock.
Right.
Big fucking deal. Right, I've eaten two pussies. It doesn't make me straight.
No.
Oh yeah, at least
you're not golden. That's
yesterday.
Okay.
No, I did. No, but I've had sex with women. But when I was the woman never accused me of being straight.
Right. Yeah.
That's
it's
beautiful.
Funny. The farthest I ever went with a woman is with two girls who actually knew that I was gay, and then it
at
was
the
like
same
safe.
Time.
Yeah, at the same time.
Oh, what? Good for you.
Did you, have,
no,
did
no
you actually? Have,
no, bit dick wouldn't work. But the thing is, we, you know,
what'd you do?
Touch titties. Bleep that out, HPJ. You can't say titties.
You can't say titties. S&P's going to get us. Wow.
Offends people, Joe.
Oh, you mean Sarah Jessica Parker? You just dropped the J? Oh, we're done with the J.
We're done with
S&P. It's all S&P.
If she came out and said she was now Sarah Parker, I would rise to my feet, bitch. I would say, yes, honey, you reinvent.
Finally.
Reinvent, honey.
If she announced that at a Cynthia Nixon event, I would.
Oh, God. It's like, she might win.
She might
win. That's what she needs
That's
to do
needs
to help Cynthia
do.
Win.
She needs to come out and say, my name is Sarah Parker. And
what?
Everyone's going to be like, what? Oh, my God. Kim Cattrall will come out. She's like, I'm Kim Jessica Cattrall.
Oh, my God.
Oh, God. That's where the J went.
Yep, she took it.
Kim found it.
She took it.
She absorbed it.
Hiding it in her pussy all these years.
There you go.
Here's a
I
J.
Found, this
found it, Sarah, you bitch.
Sarah's J. Where's Sarah's J?
Oh my God.
Fucking what's her face? Kristen Davis is like, I'm here too, guys. They're like, who? What was that? The wind?
Who's that woman with two names? Get lost.
Two names.
Two name loser.
Kristen Davis with
Kristen Davis.
A sibilance heavy name.
Yeah, very.
Very heavy.
Unsung hero of the films.
I do have to say, I will hate myself if I don't tell you this to your face.
We don't
Scott.
Want you to hate yourself.
I feel like if they don't, if you are not approached by The Crown to portray Elizabeth in her later years.
Olivia Colman, who?
That is absolutely my dream.
Yeah.
My delusional dream that I will play the queen from like 40 to 60.
Because
you give me Claire Foy.
Out of anybody else? No, but out of any other actor,
I mean, and I'm why not?
You were
I wouldn't do it. I look just
you
like
look
her.
You look just like her.
I mean, it's
the bone structure is
it's
uncanny.
Exact.
Yes.
Like, I mean, it's and I wouldn't do it campy.
No.
And I've
no.
been preparing for this moment.
Yeah.
I've actually been preparing a queen for The Crown
yes.
that is a little that is more realistic than
yeah.
my queen.
Right.
So I've been watching that show. Well, it's the greatest.
It's wonderful.
And I'm obsessed. And I watched I'm actually, this is embarrassing, but I've been watching a lot of old footage of Elizabeth, which I would do anyways.
Right.
Just because I want, because I, when I am approached by the people of
yes.
the Crown
we're gonna make
to play the older queen, I want them to know that I'm going to do her honor.
Yeah.
And of course, we might have to wear a lot of like turtle things. You might have to do
we
things.
May have
sure,
to.
But
sure.
you know what? I'll probably make you forget Claire Foy.
I bet you. I
bet
you
will.
Will.
I bet you,
you
will.
Know
I have
met?
A feeling it might be Miami.
Yeah,
it
that's
will.
That's gonna be Miami. You know who we met?
Who?
Matthew.
Matt Smith. Who plays
Philip.
He's very good, and also very sexual energy.
You can tell.
You can tell, but like
very sexual.
With us, we were like, "Are you hitting on us?"
He literally.
He's one of those.
He's one of those.
Oh, he's one of those straight men that is so secure, that they can flirt with anyone. Mads Mikkelsen from Hannibal's like that.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. Just like he doesn't care who wants to fuck him. It's like if you want to fuck him, that's good.
It's sort of infuriating, though.
But
I think I was wearing something, and he goes to me like, "It suits you," and I was like. My basement flooded.
Bedroom eyes at both of us.
Yeah, he was.
Well, you know, he's got like, he's got sexual energy.
He's got very sexual energy.
And I think it's
energy.
Interesting because, I mean, I really love the way their relationship is portrayed because they really get to the carnal center of Elizabeth. And I've always, actually almost all my characters are pretty carnal, but she's, you always knew that woman was getting Rogered regularly.
Yeah.
Really? You know what
I mean? I think so. And she made it, I mean, I think she made it very clear from her hat selection and her clothing choices that she liked it a little rough. I think she made it very clear by a yellow hat she wore at Ascot in 1978 that told us she liked it. In the poop shit.
Yeah.
Oh,
and she liked it when he pulled her hair. That was in 1981.
We're going to see her on her last day.
In Westminster Abbey. And I remember going, that brooch says you like nipple clamps. But I don't know how kinky they got, but to sustain a marriage that long,
of course
he was screwing around.
Yeah.
But she could not screw around. But I think she knew what she was getting. She got a big Greek stud, and you could tell she wanted him.
Yeah.
And he made it, and she said, "You just got to give it to me regularly. And I'll be fine."
Yeah.
And I like the way they portray their love affair. They portray that whole, you know that Philip, he couldn't possibly be.
He wouldn't be loyal ever. No,
of course not. But I think she knew. But I think, you know, I'm thinking about who is going to be my Philip when I play.
Think they're going to get.
This is a difficult question.
Someone with a sharp nose.
Who's playing Philip now? Who's playing Philip in the Olivia Coleman?
I don't know if they've cast that. They probably have. I just.
You know, Miss Helena is playing.
Helena's playing Margaret. Margaret. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Helena Bonham Carter
is playing Margaret.
Oh, that's a good choice.
It is good. Wacky.
But
I like
it. Helena resembles Claire Foy more.
Yeah, the facial structure. Yeah. I think she might have to have her jawline smashed and rearranged.
Yeah, we might have to get facial reconstructive surgery.
Sure.
I think that Helena can't play Elizabeth because her instincts are too quirky and wacky.
Totally.
No, she can't play Elizabeth.
But I'm just saying in terms of resemblance. And then Olivia looks like, what's her face? Kirby.
Vanessa Kirby.
Yeah.
Would it be wrong for Liam Neeson to be my Philip?
No, I wouldn't.
Liam would be great.
That would be amazing.
That wouldn't be against the law.
I'm trying to think of someone with a gaunter face.
A gaunter face.
Right. Someone
that's a good one.
Oh, God.
Gaunter.
Maybe like a...
Not like a Colin Firth.
I was going to say like a Pierce Brosnan, but he's not gaunt. What am I saying?
No. He's also... I'm not a fan.
Okay, you know what? Let's go with Liam. Liam's a great Philip to you.
I think he'd be good. I think we'd be good together.
But it doesn't matter. As long as you're Elizabeth, that is all I want. You have the Windsor face.
I remember it's true. Like I grew up in a large family. I grew up in my mother was a very big monarchist, and you know in Canada,
you know
what it's like.
Right,
I mean, she literally is.
She's the ruler
of Canada. She's on our money.
Yes.
She's our monarch.
Yeah. She's the queen.
And I can't help it. I feel. Love for her.
I love her. I love
her. And I know when she died, I'm not working that day. That's it.
Oh, the whole economy of the UK is going to shut down for a week.
It's just not.
Really?
It's just not going to happen.
Yeah.
It will take me a while to get over it.
You care about the weddings?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's
Ms. Markle. She's acceptable.
Oh, absolutely.
Love her.
I think she's the breath of fresh air they need.
Yeah. Yes, exactly.
Know. But I don't know what we're talking about with Queen.
I'm just saying that you must play.
Oh, yeah. And it's funny because so I grew up in this family where my mother would have a picture of her family. We had a family in the foyer, like of our family, but it was small. And then a huge picture of the royal family.
Mm.
And this whole time, the kids in the hall, Mark particularly, would say, "You look like the Queen." I go, I don't know. And so Mark wrote this piece called It's a Fact, which is about this little red-haired girl that runs into the camera and goes, "It's a fact." And they would do these crazy little fact things. And Mark said, "It's a fact." And the first one was, "It's a fact. The Queen doesn't know her ABCs." So, and I would be, ew, one, ew, A, B, C, D. XQY 7112 Chesterfield coat, and it would be all like, and so they said, so they made me as the queen. It was a one off, and I went into the makeup with Judy and Jerry, our makeup and hair wizards, and Jerry was making me up, and she was like, what's happening? She didn't have to do. And she said, I don't have to do that much. And then Judy came over with the wig, and they put it on, and then, you know, Jerry and Judy are like, look in the mirror, and I was like, this is weird. And I mean, and Mark goes, I knew it. And I walked out of the trailer. I'm even getting chills thinking about it, because it was I remember the moment so clearly, and everybody looked and went, and I remember the crew looking and going, it's too much. And I'd never even practiced my voice. Yeah. I'd never, because a lot of the kids in the hall, it came about as we were getting made up. We wouldn't even know how we were going to play anything.
Yeah,
right?
Sure.
And I remember the voice came instantly, and I went, hello. And I just started waving to people, and I instantly became her. And it was an
immaculate conception.
It was a transformative moment. And I went, I have her bone structure.
Yeah.
I look like the Lost Windsor. And I remember we had did a little piece, and then we had some extra time. This almost never happened. It was on a film shoot, one of our film shoots. And then we improvised this whole piece that came out of nowhere, which is where the queen walks the little red-haired girl off the end of a dock, gives her a bunch of stones, and says, jump out, there's gold at the bottom. And I was trying to drown her, because the queen always drowned redheads because they were bad luck.
Yes, oh my God, yes. I didn't know.
Yes. And it was all improvised, and it became the credit, the closing credit sequence. And then from then on, I was off and running.
So it's the only celebrity impression.
It's the only one.
Only one that's ever been on the show.
Here's something I pulled from like the Edward thing.
Mm-hmm.
Was that a real rumor that he was gay?
Oh God, yeah.
Yes. Okay. I'm not familiar
with
the
rumor. It's still a rumor, is it?
Really?
Not? Oh yeah.
Because then I thought wow, the scandal that would erupt if one of the royal family was gay. Like what that must feel like.
Well, it couldn't have happened.
Yeah.
No. There was lots of rumors. He worked for Andrew Lloyd Webber, was it, or what? Who was? Not Andrew Lloyd Webber. Was?
I don't know that.
Someone like that. No, he wasn't gay. Some musical guy, though.
Sure, sure,
Sondheim?
Sure.
Might have been Sondheim. Mm-hmm. Someone. I don't remember.
Because there was an Andrew Lloyd Webber joke in the sketch.
Yes, it must have been then. But, you know, no, he could not have been gay. I mean, but who knows what he is? I don't know. But that was absolutely a rumor. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, that reality. Totally, if that's true, though, that reality of any royal family member realizing that about themselves,
but
that's to be absolutely
That's
terrifying.
Going to happen.
Yeah, of course it is.
Oh, it will.
I mean...
Yeah. Once we, as soon as we get a lesbian president, we are going to get a gay member of the royal family.
And
I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, they're already there, but they'll be an open one.
I know. Yeah, an open gay one.
They are already there.
They're there.
That's so sad.
Oh, yeah. Lots
we can't
of
even think about that. Anyway. Should we move on?
We should move on to I Don't Think So, Honey. This is our segment where we take 1 minute to rail against something in pop culture that's just, we hate it.
We hate it. We hate it.
We need to talk about it passionately.
So you're going
to
see us do it.
Okay.
And then we'll ask you to do one as well on a topic of your choosing. Okay? Oh!
Perfect.
Scott Thompson's going to do it. I don't think so.
Now,
this is huge. Okay.
Do you have one that you want to do or should I go?
You should go. You should go. Okay. This is Matt Rogers. I don't think so, honey.
I don't know where this one's going to go. I'm just going to leave with my heart.
His time starts now.
I don't think so, honey. People at the bar who get their drink and still stand at the bar.
Wow.
So that no one else can get there.
Uh-huh.
And I'll tell you something. It's you straights.
Oh.
Because it doesn't really happen at the gay bar because we have some sense.
Sure.
And also you want to go off and talk to people.
Mm.
You straight people are so boring. You have nothing more to do than create drama by standing at the bar. I'm at Northern Territory yesterday in Greenpoint. It was a zoo. It was just, and not because it was crowded. It was a zoo because it was animal-like behavior. And it's animal-like behavior. It's not dignified to get your cocktail and stay there. Move out of the way, Terrence.
Oh.
Says I need
Terrence,
to, I don't
Terrence.
Know, this is the name I picked. Because I need to order a drink and I can't do it from back
15
here.
Seconds.
And guess who else you're pissing off? The fucking bartender who's busting their ass, who also wants to get a new piece of client ass right there up at the bar so she can have a new drink roll through. This is a
Five
system, honey.
Seconds.
And if you're not ready to operate in the system, you're not ready to be in this establishment. I don't think so, honey.
And that's 1 minute. Wow.
You are raising your fist.
A new piece of client
Robin
ass.
Is down
Robin,
from that. I don't
Robin
think
agrees.
So, honey.
Wow. Well done.
You gotta cycle out, okay?
Yeah.
And neither
sure.
of you can say nothing because you know I'm right.
What does cycle out mean?
cycle out. Like,
just like if I'm here, turn the turnover.
If you're the bartender, I say, hi, can I get a gin and tonic?
Yeah.
I get it. We do the transaction. I cycle out, honey. I turn around and I walk my ass to another part of the bar.
Beautiful.
That's how that works.
Cycle out.
So the homo behind me, AKA me,
yeah,
can go up there and order a drink.
Ooh, I'm gonna do one that might be a little controversial. But it's about the culture.
John McCain related? All right, here we go. This is Bowen Yang's I Don't Think So, Honey, and his time starts now.
I Don't Think So, Honey, people distributing this fucking clip of John McCain shooting down that crazy old lady at his rally for calling Obama an Arab, and his whole rebuttal is, no, he's a decent man who we just happen to disagree. I mean, yes, that was an okay response, but people are lionizing this in this way that is just trying to, like, lionize the bare fucking minimum. First of all, the implication, I remember so clearly this day in 2008. I watched Maddow that night.
30
she
seconds.
Made a joke about how, well, an Arabic person and a decent family man would never intersect in the same person, right? Like, yeah, like that's the implication. It's shitty. Like, John McCain is whatever. I'm not one of these people who's dancing on his grave, but I'm saying let's go through different things
seconds.
In the highlight reel and say this is like he, in terms of policy, he pushed this through. Why focus on this interaction that really just should be the norm instead of like heralding it as this gorgeous manna from the political gods?
And that's 1 minute. I agree with you. I think the whole thing is getting blown out of proportion, literally on both sides, because it's like, A,
but people are, I mean, we're a day out. He passed away yesterday. We're recording this on the, what, 26th? Like, people, every news site is like, wow, remember when John McCain did this? And I'm like, yo.
But on the opposite side, I think that to insinuate that he's saying, no, it's not an Arab, he's a good person, is also going too far. I think that I think it's going too far, and I get that people are, you know, come for me or whatever, but the thing is, he, in a moment of this woman saying, this person's a bad person, they're an Arab, he, in a political moment where everyone was watching, said to her, no, this is not, he's not a
sure.
bad person. It's, that's the energy. So people acting like him saying he's not an Arab, he's a good person, that is not what he's saying. And I think on both sides, we need to fucking cool it.
Sure.
That's,
I mean,
what,
like,
I think.
I'm just saying, like, there's, but like, I'm trying to like pull the tension backwards. Like, but everyone's building this thing up.
I think that there's, I think it's so unfortunate that we're fixating on this clip as his lifelong legacy when there's other things.
That's what I'm saying, is that there's this fixation on the clip. And I'm saying it's not that remarkable. Well, I mean, it's good that he shot her down, but I'm saying like Feingold, McCain, like talk about the things that he did in his political life and not just this interaction that he had with a crazy
totally
person.
I think they should have focused on how gorgeous he was when he was
younger. Yeah, he was a,
I mean, we're
daddy.
Losing focus.
Yeah, truly. I mean, let's bring it back to what's really important.
His looks.
I agree with you. I think it's this whole thing of like assuming we can have a smarter intelligence about this when we're not dealing with smart people, we're dealing with Americans.
Yeah.
Sorry, bitch.
You notice we kept quiet
as Canadians.
Yeah, continue to keep quiet.
Okay, this is Scott Thompson's I Don't Think So, Honey.
Unless,
Scott,
you don't want to do one?
This is okay, you know what?
Well, I just say there's a few things that I wanted. I've had such a good time, and I feel like this might derail me.
Listen.
Because, I mean, I know what I want to talk about. I know it's going to be controversial. And
all
I
right.
Okay,
don't.
okay.
Well, then.
And I'd rather save it for tonight when you're going to see it on stage.
Okay, good.
So this is historical. We've never had a guest decline, which we
honor. Is it terrible?
Which, no.
It's honorable.
It's honorable.
I think it's an honorable thing for me to not do that.
I have too much respect for you to demand that you follow my fucking rules. Who the hell am I? Some stupid queer?
I think
I can't believe I said no.
No, I don't
Scott
know.
Scott Thompson.
Great. I think that's punk rock.
Is what a trailblazer. Truly, true. I'm not even being facetious. Like, this is, we will honor this. Like,
but I will say,
any other guest would be like, no, you have to
do
one.
Any other guest that comes on here and says they don't want to do one, you can go fuck yourself.
Go fuck yourself. You're not
Scott. You know, I mean, of course, I railed about other things during the
You certainly did. You railed and railed.
And this is a thing where the first person gets all the attention. The second, not the third. There will never be a second or a third. It's only Scott Thompson.
You know what? What is it you say?
I don't think so, honey.
You know, I don't think so, honey. Here's what I hate is you go on a podcast and the host asks you, oh, they do a bit that they always do all the time and it really works. And everybody that comes on our show does it. So you're going to do it. I hate that. You know what? I don't want to do your stupid bit, honey. Okay? It might work for you, but it ain't working for me.
Okay.
But you know what? Here's the thing, bitch.
And you know what?
Here's the thing, bitch.
I've given you 1 hour, 23 minutes, and 22 seconds. And now you're asking me to do something that you guys have been working on for months and months and months. Oh. You've worked all the bugs out, and now you're gonna throw me under the bus with your bit? I don't think so.
And guess what, bitch? You just fell on the trap because you just did it. And it was a sleigh. And that's the new generation coming up. And so outsmarting you and outwitting you.
Damn you! I am Spartacus!
I do not count that as an I don't think so, because I want this to be canon. Scott Thompson did not want to do one, and we honored that.
Time's up.
Time's up. Our time is up.
Time's
that's what
up.
I mean.
No, I'm just saying time's up because it's a good thing to say.
Because it's a good thing to say. Wow. I mean,
this was very meaningful.
This was a very meaningful interaction.
It was great. Honorable. Great time, guys.
Truly, truly wonderful.
Much more fun than I thought I would have. Like,
really?
When you're
we
called,
get that a
well,
lot.
When you're called, I mean, I knew you were fun, but I just, when you called me honorable, I thought, oh, it's going to be an honorable.
Ew,
no.
Ew,
that was a bad choice of words on my part.
Fucking suck.
I sucked.
I hate you, Bowen. You're bad. That was bad words.
That was just our way of just blowing smoke up all of our asses.
Okay, yeah, wow. The first 2 minutes of this podcast really was that. I was like, you know, I'm happy I didn't have grow up with you because I would have been really overwhelmed. It's like a stupid twink.
Yeah. So disingenuous.
I got called an aging twink the other day, and I was like, you go fuck
yeah,
yourself.
And no, but wait. That's the best kind of twink.
Aging twink?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
I gotta love myself.
Yeah. Wow.
Right, Joe?
You do.
You'd fuck me, right? Thank you, Joe.
Gorgeous. Oh, yeah. If you have advice for Joe, if you have tips for Joe to live his best life, let
I'm
us
telling
know.
You, that litter separator is...
It's something.
It's working for someone.
It's working for someone. Joe. Check out
Joyful.
Scott's album, Not a Fan, the re-release of the book, Buddy Babylon, and next time he's in New York, please check him out if he's doing Après le Déluge again.
Après le Déluge.
Scott, thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
Perfect.
And we end on a song. Out with a song.
Here we go.
What if God was one of us? It's Sunday. Just a slob. Like is it slob or snob?
I think in Austin Powers it was slob.
Slob like one of us.
Bye.
Forever Dog. This has been a Forever Dog production. Executive produced by Brett Boehm, Joe Cilio, and Alex Ramsey. For more original podcasts, please visit foreverdogpodcasts.com and subscribe to our shows on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Keep up with the latest Forever Dog news by following us on Twitter.